T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back, everybody. Another edition of Me and Eddie C. Sweeney Murdy, Ed Coleman, and we'll do this for real, we should tell you, Eddie. Should tell everyone that we've got a lot of time where we'll be actually able to take phone calls instead of just having people listen to us ramble on and on here. We've got some shows in place of Sunday Night Baseball. We've got Sunday Night Baseball Talk and more coming up in the month of June.
And I think our time frame, Sweeney, is pretty much like a Yankees Red Sox, 4 hours, 7 to 11 on Sunday night.
That's it.
That'll take you right through. So it'll be just like old times.
Yeah. Every Sunday in June will be Yankees Red Sox, except let's see, I'll be the Yankees, you be the Red Sox, and we'll take 4 hours to just do nothing and come back the next week. Should be fun. But we'll start that up on WFAN, and you can hear it streaming on radio.com, and we'll be on. Hopefully with lots of interesting things to talk about and people to talk to. Normal show. What we've been doing here for the last, I don't know, couple of months, we've just been meeting weekly and kind of giving an update on what's been happening in the world of baseball and what we've been doing while we haven't been able to cover baseball games. We've been talking for the last couple of weeks, Ed, about how the time crunch is really starting to happen if they want to get some sort of a real season together. A lot of proposals have been thrown back and forth in the last week since we last talked. That's a good sign, but I'm not sure how much closer we are to actually getting some sort of a season underway.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Sweeney. I think we said June 1st they had to kind of come to some kind of agreement here, because you need a couple of weeks to get everybody down to spring training and or home ballparks if that's where you're going to do spring training. And a couple of clubs have talked about that. But that's been stretched out a little bit. We're, what, June 3rd right now. I still think you have some time, but, you know, you're running kind of thin by the end of this week, or say Sunday or Monday. I think you have to have something in place if you're going to do this and get the time frame in that the owners want. And I think one thing that's important here, I don't think the owners are going to budge on anything past October. I think they want this done, the regular season, by September. And I think that they want the postseason in October for a couple of reasons. Obviously, the coronavirus making a return in the fall, but also the fact that they worry about what you're up against in November, possibly with be it the NHL, NBA still going on or something going on, but the NFL in particular, they worry about that and they want that time frame stuck to. And the players have proposed a lot more games. The owners have proposed a lot less. One thing that I guess struck me is that when you take the 114 that the players proposed and you take the 50 to 60, just say 50 that the owners proposed, the midpoint is 82. Hey, has that number come up before? I think it has. Yeah, wow. How about that?
We found that place somewhere before. Why did we stray so far away from it just to meet back here? What I took from the 114 was that players want to play and they're trying to give the owners a little something back. Okay, we're going to give you more games, but you got to give us our money. You got to give us our real prorated money. And maybe that gives them more TV product. But when the owners came back with what they came back with, you and I had spoken a couple of days ago, it's like, it's basically sending one message. Here's all the money we have. Right. You can take it over 80 games if you want, but we have 50 games worth to pay you. So why don't we just play 50 and call it a day?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because I think probably the next logical step that you go, I think the players are supposed to come back at this point, and probably they'll go to, you know, somewhere around the 82 or maybe a little bit above, and okay, we've come down from the 114, but the owners will probably say, okay, well, the reason we propose 50 or 60 is we don't have the money for that or whatever. So I don't know where this is going to settle in the middle. The one thing that I think is a little discouraging is kind of the emails that went back and forth, I think, you know, between Rob Manfred's deputy and Tony Clark. There still seems to be a lot of animosity there. And the owner saying that, well, you know, Tony Clark acknowledged that, you know, he made a mistake. And Tony goes, well, no, that's not that's not the case. So that still exists. And you have to get beyond that. But hopefully they will. Certainly there are voices all around saying, look, you know, get this done, because this is not going to look good. And I do understand baseball's hesitancy a little bit, but they don't have time for hesitancy at this point. I do believe that it's difficult for any of these leagues to be the first one in the water, because they don't want to start and stop.
Right.
The NHL, I think, you know, is pretty well set with what they want to do, but they're not coming back till July, like probably toward around July 20th or so. That's, you know, a month and a half away. NBA, we're not sure. I think tomorrow they're going to outline a plan for Orlando. The other thing that you have to think about with those leagues as opposed to baseball, NBA is going to be in one place, I think.
Right.
Orlando maybe two, Las Vegas, I don't know, but Orlando definitely. And the NHL is going to be in two and eventually one.
Yeah.
Baseball is going everywhere. And that to me exacerbates the problems that they have.
They're trying to get some sort of a regular season completed, whereas NHL and NBA can pretty much move right into their playoff format and crown a champion and have it be over. The more I think about it though, Ed, I was thinking about this in terms of the 50 game schedule, and it's a real problem with 50, and it's a similar problem with say 82, but maybe a little bit less so. I think the quality of play in a 50-game season would be atrocious. I think players coming back after this layoff would not all be in the equal shape. I think the injury factor is exacerbated in a 50-game season. Think about it. Two years ago, Aaron Judge got hit by a pitch, broke his wrist. He missed 48 games. Mm-hmm. That's the whole season. How many times have we seen a pitcher have, you know, even in a Cy Young award winning season, have a 4 or 5 start stretch where they're just not there? Like real good pitchers, they lose it for 4 or 5 games. You're going to get 10 starts in a 50 game season. This has the quality of play has disaster written all over it for me.
Yeah, to your point, it's a great point. To your point, a couple of things. I look at Jacob DeGrom last year. Three, I won't say bad starts, but three shaky starts. Mm-hmm. When did they come? At the end of April and the beginning of May. That would be, you know, games 10 to 20 or thereabouts in a 50-game season or whatever. And then, you know, he was great the rest of the season. That's what you like to see. The other point is this, that I think, and this kind of lends itself to the 82 games or half a season. I think by the time you get to that point, you might be playing your best baseball, all right? Or you're getting to that point or much closer to it. That's when you would start the playoffs. And that's what you want. You want teams at their utmost at that point. During October, you probably would have your best baseball of all at that point in time. And to me, that's something that the owners should be striving for. I would agree. 50 games is, we always say, we sit back and say, you know, everybody says, what do you think of the team after 30 games or whatever? We always say, hey, give me 50 games, which is, you know, somewhere around Memorial Day, but give me 50 games and I'll tell you where they are. That's about a third of the way through the season. But I agree totally that I think the baseball would not be of its prime. Let's put it that way.
And I think there is a positive in the idea. We've talked about how any team can play well for 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 games. Even bad teams, historically bad teams, can have a good stretch like that where they can maintain and stay in a race. But I think on an individual basis, I think there is a greater injury factor, risk factor here for these players because of where they are physically and how hard they would be trying to catch up and compete. Once those games happen, This is how they are starting to make their money for next year when things hopefully rebound. They are playing for contracts. They are playing for future. And they're playing to compete. Let's not forget that. They're going to compete hard, and they're going to get hurt. And when they do, they're going to miss enough time where you're going to be digging deeper and deeper into the organization. And it's not Major League Baseball anymore. It's not, you know, there's one thing where you have to fill in the gaps over the course of, say, a 3-week injury or 4-week injury in a 6-month season. When you're talking about an 8 to 9 week season or whatever it's going to be, and almost every injury that's significant, Eddie, is a month. I mean, even simple muscle pulls, they're a month.
Absolutely.
That's really going to affect the quality of play.
Yeah. I mean, look at any time you hear the word oblique, okay? Yeah. That's, you know, everybody says, well, how long do you think it'll be? Well, probably put 6 weeks away right away, right?
Hamstrings are a month.
Yeah. And hamstrings are a month. Yeah. And you don't have the time here. And I'll go back to this. I do think the owners are going to hold tight here too. I don't think they want to go beyond October. The other reason too, which I didn't mention before, and we've said it before, I think they want a baseball season next year, a normal one. You know, they're starting in February for spring training, March, and start. I don't think they want to start the season in May next year. So that's another reason why they want that. But if you're going to hold fast to that, then that's why you've got to come to grips here, you know, pretty soon with what, you know, what's happening. You've got to come to some sort of agreement here. I do think if there is going to be an agreement, and I still think there will be, I still think there will be baseball, you're going to have to come to some sort of percentage of deferred payment. Right. Somehow, some way. I don't know what they're going to be paid and who's going to be totally happy here. I think they want to stay away from salary cap altogether. They don't want that instituted. I know a couple of the owners, I think it was Tom Ricketts, had mentioned that the other day about, you know, he made the point 70% of his revenue is from game day, which I'm not quite sure it is. And they're going to make 20% of what they normally make this year if they go with what they have right now. But, you know, the point is that, you know, the owners, I think, are going to hold fast to this. So they've got to come up with some kind of percentage which will help the players down the line in the years to come. If the players eventually get their money and if you can throw the interest in, maybe it's more money than they might expect. It's still going to be less than what they would make, but everybody's making less money this year.
Right, right. And you know, let's be clear here. It's not real good optics, but we're not at a point yet where we're missing any action. Like, this is about the point in the calendar where they have to start making decisions. And I think in best case, we always thought the earliest they could ever start a season was July 4th, even in best case situations. So even if it's, say, July 15th or 20th, you really haven't lost a lot of time. These negotiations haven't cost anything. It's just a simple process of doing business. You and I both work for a union. Plenty of other people that are listening, they work for unions. If their employer told them to go back to work and these are the conditions and this is how much you're getting paid, anybody's union would say, okay, slow down. We're going to have to talk about this first. That's all that's happening right now. And as bad as the optics are because of the amount of money being talked about and the general public and the situation that everybody is in, it doesn't come off looking good, but we really haven't lost any time on the calendar. This is the crucial part right now. We haven't really lost anything yet.
I will still reserve the right to be skeptical whether they can actually get through this entire season. And like I said, I do
medically,
think they
you
will.
Mean, too.
Yeah, medically. Well, I think that's important. Example, Japan, which is starting up. They're in the exhibition season, their spring training right now. Two players from the Yomiuri Giants, I think, one of the teams. Anyway, the Central League MVP, by the way, is one of them. But they tested positive. And I'm not quite sure what they're doing. I know in Korea, they said that if anybody tests positive, they're shutting down the league for 3 weeks. That hasn't happened. But they're an 11-team, I think an 11-team league, a much smaller league. Japan's a little different, but I don't know where they go from here or how they deal with that. You're going to have to go through spring training here, then all the travel as well. So I remain skeptical whether you can get through the whole thing, but I applaud them for trying, and I do think they're going to get to this and try. Just as an aside, yesterday I was sitting out in the backyard, and I realized it was June 2nd. And I said, what am I doing? You know, we're like 60 games into a season and it's a Tuesday. And I said, I'm what am I doing here? I mean, I've never seen that before. I've never sat in the backyard at this time of the day. You know, we're always at the ballpark or on the road somewhere. Yeah. I said, what am I doing here? So I think it's probably getting to people because it's getting to me a little bit. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how I've cooked more meals in a row than I ever have before. My family has no idea what's going on because they've never seen me this much consecutively. So, you know, this is what's supposed to happen in November, December, and January, not April, May, and June. It's throwing us all off. The weather's finally turning in the Northeast, so I think now we're all finally really starting to feel it, because even 2 weeks ago it was snowing around here. So I think we're all starting to feel like, okay, this is a plus. You know, some of the restrictions have been eased in certain parts of the state and parts of New Jersey, and you're starting to see people just really aching to be normal again. You want to get a little bit of your life back, even if all the businesses aren't open yet. You want to start to move in that direction, and whether it's small gatherings and just getting together with your neighbors and kind of being safe and staying apart and just kind of hanging out for a little bit, or doing something that involves leaving your house, we're all kind of aching for it. And that so kind of leads us to believe that, okay, maybe the sports part will catch up soon and we'll get that part back.
Yeah, and hopefully it does. Listen, what we have been through as a country here in the last week in particular, you know, you hope never happens again. And I think it's important for every sport to get behind the hope and push forward and try to make a difference here that this will not happen again. And obviously what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis, it's torn this country apart at this point in time. It's another reason for baseball to come back as something that maybe can unite and help in that regard. You know, we'll talk about this more probably on Sunday, and hopefully things will be better. At least things took a turn, I think, for the better a little bit last night. There certainly was less looting and less violence and less unpurposefulness, let's put it that way, which has been going on for a while. But I know a lot of players have spoken out about this too, and it's something we can't forget. And I think what we have to do is remember that we can't forget. You know, it's funny, these things have continuously happened over time, Sweeney, and then things happen like baseball coming back, and everybody goes, "Oh, great, okay." Right. Then you totally forget about it. Can't do that at this time. You have to listen, and you've got to pay attention, and hopefully we have learned that as a nation.
I think one of the things we've all kind of learned in the last couple of months, whether it's the political side, the medical side, or now the social side of this tragic situation, it's hard to change people's minds. You know, they get ideas entrenched, and it's what causes so much of the discord. And you're trying to get points across without always listening to the other side, and it's really hard to get people to change their minds. And maybe rather focusing on changing minds, we should just think about listening more and how that could work. And I don't know if it's possible. Like you said, these situations have come up time and time again, and we all say the same things, and then we go back onto normal. I'm curious how this plays out even when fans are not allowed into the ballpark for these games that will potentially happen. It doesn't mean they can't protest outside the ballpark.
Good point.
All these events are happening in major American cities that have Major League Baseball teams as well. And if the violence in those areas, hopefully, as you said, it's starting to subside here a little bit. But if it doesn't go completely away, if the protests don't go completely away and are continuing into the summer, this is an area that could affect what's happening. And maybe that's the bad part. But the good part is it at least keeps the discussion going, because that's really all, you know, I think that's what all anybody wants, is to not have this be a world of Twitter statements released and inaction. You want action, you want discourse, you want people to talk about it, because that's the only, you know, it's uncomfortable, but that's why it needs to be talked about.
Well, you don't get change unless you have uncomfortable moments and you go through that, and you've got to fight for that. And if it's not going to happen, and if it's not going to happen with intelligent and sensible discourse, then you're going to get some of the situations that you've had over the last couple of days. Hopefully, those will tone down. Hopefully, people will change. But I think you can't forget that, regardless of if baseball comes back or not. And you have to listen. You certainly have to listen more than what we've been able and willing to do. Lost in all this, I'm sure it's not lost, but I think subjugated during all this is a pandemic, which is still gripping us. And the reason that we're talking about, trying to get these sports back and get them back safely, but, certainly what's happened over the last week or so has not helped everything. When you listen, there are a lot of theories and what's good, what's bad, what we should do. But, one which has, I think, been pretty constant is that social distancing has helped. Okay. Right. We have not had social distancing here for the last week. Just look around this country. It hasn't happened because of this. And, I understand everyone's anger, but I don't think any of us want to go through another, in another 2 or 3 weeks.
There's what we went wave.
Yeah. Exactly. What we went through in March. There's another one maybe waiting for us in the fall. Okay. I don't want to go through that either, but I certainly don't want to go through one again in the summer and have to wait for that in the fall as well.
So. I want to tap into this more on Sunday night with you, and remind people that you and I are going to be on Sunday night, 7 to 11 p.m. on WFAN, and every Sunday in the month of June. Hopefully we'll have baseball games in July to replace us, but we'll see what happens with that. But I want to get more into the idea that this is reminding a lot of people of the things that happened in the mid to late 60s, and I'm sure you have some thoughts and recollections and memories of all that growing up in that time. I want to tap into more about that. We'll tell people to listen on Sunday night, and we'll talk more about that. One of the things that we've kind of been doing is filling our time with old sports stories. And two of the things that were on TV on ESPN this past week, I watched one. I did not watch the other, at least part of one. I did not watch a second of Lance Armstrong. I was not interested. You saw some of that. You came away with what from that?
It did not. It certainly didn't grab me like The Last Dance, that's for sure. And I kind of muddled through it. I wasn't a big Lance Armstrong fan. I'm not a big cycling or Tour de France fan. But the one thing I took away from it, which I found interesting, his son plays, I think it's for Rice. He's a lineman, I think, but I'm not positive of his position, but he plays for Rice University. And he was asked, because of the sport you're in, and because there certainly is a lot of speculation that in the NFL, this goes on, people build themselves up. But would you ever think about doing this? And he said unequivocally, no. He says, that's cheating. And he says, I know. He says, I've told my dad that. He said, that's cheating yourself. It's cheating others. I just thought that came through to me that obviously this had a great impact on him. It was good to see that he came out, I think, on the right side and the good side of that. Seemed like an intelligent kid. And that was the moment that I took from it. Lance Armstrong, he has done a lot of good. He's raised a lot of money for a lot of charities, and he's done a lot of good in that regard. But the harm that he did to himself and the sport, I think, certainly doesn't go away.
I hope that soundbite doesn't come back to bite him. That's not the one we're replaying over and over again when the other shoe drops. I hope it is genuine, and hopefully he has a good career ahead of him. The other one that I watched part of last night, I probably didn't watch the right part. I think about it. I watched the 12-year-old 30 for 30 on Len Bias, and I missed all the programming before that, including an epic game against North Carolina that I vaguely remember watching as a kid, or highlights of it at least. You were working in Boston when Len Bias was drafted by the Celtics and died a couple of days later. What did you think looking back on all that last night?
I'll tell you what, the wounds that have been opened up in this country don't compare, but the old wounds were opened up for me last night in another way, looking back at Len Bias, because he was just a tremendous, tremendous player. There are a lot of people, obviously, who don't know him and don't know of him, but it really, one thing that really struck me, Bill Walton was was talking about this. In 1986, the Celtics, they went 40-1 at home. They were, I mean, you could say it might have been the greatest Celtic team ever. Sure. You can argue that forever. But they rolled through the league. They beat Houston for a championship. And actually, the draft was during the NBA Finals.
Oh, wow.
And Bill, they had Bill Walton on. He was talking about meeting Len Bias. After he was drafted, they brought him to the team. He met everyone in the locker room. The next day, he was dead. Yeah. The next day, he died of a cocaine overdose. And I'll say this here. This was not a kid who lived on the edge or was a rough kid. This was a kid who didn't drink, which totally shocked his compatriots and everyone else. Now, apparently he had done cocaine before. That's what he died of. It was prevalent at that time in society. But you get the sense that Len Bias was a guy that, you know, he overdid it one night. It cost him his life, and it cost everyone probably a 10 to 15 year period of watching one of the great basketball players in the world. The thing I remember about Bias is that he probably didn't go to the basket as well as Michael Jordan, but he was a force around the basket, mm-hmm. just immense strength and not a huge body. Maybe had the greatest jump shot I've ever seen. He could hit from anywhere, went straight up in the air, always shot over people because he had such great lift in his legs. I don't know if he would have been as good a defensive player as Michael Jordan, but mm-hmm. he would have been on the Jordan Bird level. And Jackie McMullen, who was an old friend of mine from Boston, I kind of got a kick out of this. She was talking to Red Auerbach, the late Red Auerbach at one point, and Auerbach thought that Len Bias would have been better than Larry Bird. Now, wow. Think about that. Think yeah. about that. Yeah. I mean, that is high praise. It just is amazing to me to watch him and just a tremendous player. The thing that always killed me is that he was the next up. The Celtics were getting older. The next yeah. year, they lost in the finals, but Danny Ainge went down with injuries during the season. Scott Wedman, another role player, he was out a lot of the year. Larry Bird's back started to go out. Mm-hmm. Kevin McHale got hurt with his ankle in the playoffs. So Bias would have helped an awful lot during that time, giving them rest, making them a better team, adding another piece to it. That was the next step for them to continue what they thought would be a dynasty, and it was gone in a day. And here's something that I forgot that came out during this as well. Reggie Lewis, who mm-hmm. was a Boston kid, went to Northeastern. The Celtics drafted him. Now, he played for the Celtics for a few years, but it was only a matter of time, I think it was the early 90s, when he died of a heart attack.
Yeah, 93.
And he... You know, they lost Len Bias and Reggie Lewis during that time, and those are years that Celtics weren't good again till God knows when. But, those were guys that probably could have carried them through certainly different times.
The thing I had forgotten that Bias was such a great shooter. Like, I remember, yeah. like, highlights that you watch were all these, you know, finishing the fast breaks and the thunderous dunks that...
Right.
And I'd forgotten what a really good shooter he was. And he was fun to watch the highlights of such a great player. The thing I remember about when it happened, I was 16. I turned 16, I don't know, like 10, 12 days after he died, after he was drafted and died. He died like two mm-hmm. days after the draft.
Yeah.
And the thing that like struck me as I'm watching, and it was an old 30 for 30 that I watched after the special last night, but the thing that struck me was the perspective I have now versus the perspective I had then. He was 6 years older than me. And was a college kid. I was 2 years away from going to college myself, and everything he had worked for was gone in a second. Mm-hmm. And I was not an elite athlete, but I had dreams. I had a future that I wanted to achieve, and you saw how quickly it could get taken away from you with bad decisions. Now, I yeah. wasn't at risk. I came from a good home, and I wasn't inclined to do drugs even before this. But if you needed wake-up calls, you know, there was one right there. This second overall pick, he just signed his name and millions of dollars were in his lap right there. He just signed a shoe deal already and was ready to become the next star. And it was gone and it was over. And it's just one of these things where I say, you know, listen, I'm not him, but, you know, I've got things I want to work for too. Don't be stupid. And I think a lot of people probably had that same kind of reaction. I'm watching his story last night, and I'm watching it from the perspective of being almost 50 and watching a mother and a father bury their college-age son who just achieved this lifelong dream. And I didn't realize this, and you know, he had a brother that died in a shooting 4 years after this, who was my age. He died at age 20. So I'm looking at it from the perspective of parents who have lived to watch this happen to their children and trying to figure out how to move forward from that. So it was odd to me to watch this one event, you know, 30 plus years apart, and come to the things that hit your mind from the two different perspectives. And being a father now of two younger kids, not teenagers yet, but just seeing, you know, what's in front of them and what you can and can't control about what's happening. And, you know, you just hope for the best going forward. And as I said, like, I had visions and dreams. I wanted to see my future play out. I want my kids' visions and dreams to play out down the road. And you'd hate for anybody to go through that. And that's what I took away from watching that Len Bias story.
That's a lot to take away. That's two great life lessons right there. You know, what it meant to you and what it means to you in respect to your kids. Those are two great life lessons to take away from Len Bias' story. One quick thing, which I forgot, this is kind of funny, you know, with Walton when he was talking, and this is so Red Auerbach, and I loved Red Auerbach. I think everyone in Boston did, because he was a character, to say the least. And there are a lot of people in New York who hate Red Auerbach, and I understand that.
It's because
totally.
He kept turning the heat up in the visiting locker room, right?
That's right. Light that cigar, too. That's amazing to me when you think back when Red used to win his titles as a coach. You could light a cigar in the arena, on the bench. Before the game was over, and Red would light it up. But Walton was telling a story. The Celtics had the number 2 pick in the draft. I think it was Philadelphia.
Yeah, Brad Daugherty they took.
Had the number 1 pick in the draft, and Red would come back. And this is funny because as they're leading up to the draft, and he mentioned the draft was during the NBA Finals at that time, Walton said that Red would go to practices and the press would be around, you know, to get their daily stories. And all he mentioned was Brad Daugherty.
Yeah.
Right. We have the number 2. Brad Daugherty. He wouldn't mention Len Bias at all. Brad Daugherty's name was all around the Celtics. Everything was Brad Daugherty. And wouldn't you know, Philadelphia goes, we'll take Brad Daugherty. And
there you go.
Let Red lights up the cigar as they're drafting number 2. Thank you. We'll take Len Bias. Oh. But it obviously a couple of days later, unfortunately, like we detailed, did not work out. But that was so Red, you know, just go the other way.
And I'm thinking, I don't know if it officially happened that they drafted him and traded him, or if they traded the pick. But Cleveland got Brad Daugherty.
Right. Yeah. I think
Philly got Jeff Ruland out of that.
Gotcha.
Broken down, absolutely. Kind of broken down Jeff Ruland.
Right.
He somehow managed to get. Was that a different deal?
I don't know.
Somewhere around that time.
I don't know. I didn't look back. I'd have to look back at that. Yeah, but Daugherty's years were in Cleveland, and he was a great player.
Really good player.
And you know, kind of harkens back to when you think about Jordan, you know, who was the number 3 pick that year. You know, there were a couple of people that went before him.
Yep.
With Olajuwon and who was it?
Sam Bowie.
Yeah. Sam Bowie was the other one.
Pennsylvania kid.
Yeah, exactly. Sam Bowie. So, you know, things worked out, but I think things worked out for Chicago in that end.
I covered a charity golf outing in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania, one year. This was probably, and I think Sam Bowie was playing with the Nets at that time. But
okay.
It's one of, I'd never stood next to anybody who was 7 feet tall before. And I went to, I guess I set up on one particular hole and got some interviews as players were getting ready to tee off. He bends over to talk to me, and it's like he's talking to a 3-year-old, you know. And I'm not short, you know. I'm like 5'10", and I just realized, like, these guys are just a different breed of athletes, you know. These people are just not in the same stratosphere. I covered college football at Penn State. I've seen bigger players, like muscular players. I'd never seen anybody 7 foot tall before a person. And that was a little eye opener for me.
Hey, you know, it goes back, it harkens back to Sweeney, what we were talking about, how with baseball, people have less patience because you know, in some way, shape, or form, you can always go back to, I can do this.
Correct.
You know, I'd do it for free. You can't do that. You can't do Brad Daugherty. You can't do the NFL. You can do this. And that's why, you know, baseball has a hard time in that regard. Quick aside, when I was listening to Walt last night, I was thinking about this too, speaking of Sam Bowie. Think about Portland over the years and what's happened to them. Walt, they got a championship with Walton, but his feet, like, betrayed him after that, and he was gone. Sam Bowie, same thing. That didn't work out. And then Greg Odom later on, drafted by Oakland, and he goes down.
A lot of good
as well.
Luck there,
They have had the worst luck as far as that is concerned over the years. Big men just have not worked out or panned out for them over time. But I was thinking about that when I was watching Walton last night.
I have a Portland connection. The most famous person ever to graduate from my high school, Middletown, Pennsylvania, is Dave Twardzik.
Oh,
he,
wow,
was the point guard on the 77 Blazers, that's the Walton gang, Dr. Jack Ramsey. Dave and I went to the same high school, 20 years apart. I've had a chance to meet him a few times, talk to him a few times. I actually interviewed him once last year for a podcast. First person to ever let me hold a championship ring. I was a senior in high school, and he came back to our school. I saw his 77 Blazers NBA championship ring. So he is, I'm always striving to be number two at Middletown High School, because Dave Twardzik, who led the Middletown Blue Raiders to the state championship in 1968, he is a legend. He is a god in that town, and
That's
he has
great.
His number retired by the Portland Trailblazers. So he's, he's always number one in the annals of Middletown. That's my Blazers connection right there.
Yeah, that's great. I always have an affinity for guys like Twardzik, Paxson, Jim, the Jim Paxsons, the Steve Kerrs in the NBA, guys who get to run around while the stars do all the stuff, but they get to shoot occasionally and bingo, and certainly contribute. I always have an affinity for guys like that. It's
there you go. You identify with them. I like it. Well, we should remind people again that we are on 7 to 11 p.m. Sunday night, Eastern Time. You can listen online or radio.com or on the radio on WFAN 101.9 FM, 660 AM. And we'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some other stuff. We'll have some guests, some phone calls, and it'll be a real radio show. Until then, you can listen to this, and I guess we just kind of keep up and see where the negotiations go, Ed, and see if anything really changes over the course of the next few days, because things do seem like they move a lot faster as deadlines approach, and we've already seen the proposals go back and forth. So we'll wait and see if there's anything real moving forward as we get closer to our show on Sunday night.
Yeah, we're probably down to the last 5 or 6 days, honestly, where you got to get something done. So fingers crossed, and hopefully maybe when we're together Sunday, 7 to 11, we'll have some better news, hopefully, and something going forward. So let's hope for that.
Until then, you and I will stay locked inside and away from allergies.
Yeah, exactly.
keep our voices in check. Eddie, good talking to you. We'll do it again.
All right, Sweeney.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.